Well, howdy and welcome back to the Aggie Grades podcast. Today's the next episode in our mini-sode series focused on that 5C framework. As we develop what it means to be an Aggie great, we need to develop the tools and skills necessary to pursue greatness. And so we've focused in the past couple of weeks on core values, character, competence. Today is focused on communication, and I couldn't think of anybody better for this topic than Jacob Robbins, who's currently a sergeant at the Fort Bend County Sheriff's Office, where he's been working for the past 18 years. He's worked specifically as a SWAT assistant commander, focusing primarily on tactics. He's held positions anywhere from robotics technicians to sniper, and having experience in these life or death situations makes you realize just how important it is to communicate with your team and to communicate with those around you. So I'm so excited that you guys get to listen in on this episode. When we were recording this episode earlier, we ran into some audio problems, but this episode just has so much detail and so many amazing ideas in it that I didn't want to pass up on the opportunity to share it with you guys. So I hope you enjoy, and I apologize in advance. Howdy, and welcome to the Aggie Greats podcast. My name is Kenner, and I'm so glad you joined us this week as we dive deep to understand what makes the great, great. Here on Aggie Greats, we get real as we answer some tough questions and uncover transformative ways to live life to the fullest. We're so glad you're along for the journey, so let's pursue greatness. Well, howdy and welcome, Jacob, to the Aggie Greats podcast. We're so excited to finally have time to sit down and record with you. We know that you're extremely busy serving our communities, keeping people safe, and we're so grateful for all the things that you do for our communities. And I'm extremely grateful to get to sit down with you and talk about what does it look like to communicate effectively, especially in such high, intense situations. But before we jump into the episode, something that I like to ask every single guest on this podcast is, what is the best piece of advice that you've ever received?
Patience. And it's hard to understand what that means because there's varying different angles which you can look at that. But patience is huge, whether that be with yourself or with others. In my line of work, it's always been a team sport, right? You can't do this job by yourself. You rely on your brothers and sisters next to you to accomplish the job. And that's from A to Z, right? Whether that's, you know, putting the bad guy in jail, which is what we all signed up to do, or protect those that can't protect themselves here in our own communities. But patience with everything and everyone. And that even taps into, like we talked about earlier, the emotional intelligence piece.
But I think special operators, I think Navy SEALs, Green Berets, those groups, how is what you do within SWAT different from those profession specifically?
Okay, so primary difference between, I would say, SWAT teams with your local police force and special operations in the military is rules of engagement and support. When I mean support, funding, training, education, things like that. So rules of engagement, obviously, we're protectors of our community. We live within the communities in which we serve most of the time. So we're looking to resolve a situation peacefully, with use of force being on that last end of the spectrum, right? Whereas some rules of engagement when you're in a theater of war or conflict can look much different. And most of us, the only reference we have of that is what you see on a docuseries or a movie,
right? Yeah.
So it's very much different, but one and the same in the sense that when it comes to tactics, we bring some of the tactics that our military uses with us where it's applicable. So like searching a structure or a vehicle, we could do that in very similar manner, right? But again, with the rules of engagement are completely different. We have to operate within what our state of Texas allows us to do and the U.S. Constitution.
Yeah. So when you're working with everybody who comes onto SWAT, everybody who's made it through selection is obviously a high performer. Somebody who is, one, committed to the mission that they have, but also committed to the teammates and the family that they have. When you're working with such a potent group of highly driven, highly motivated individuals, how do you lead them and how do you make sure that they are focused around the same goal that you have set forth within the SWAT team?
So alpha males, right?
Yeah.
Yes, we are all typically alpha males, and that's for the most part what you want. You want the people that can be aggressive when it's necessary and accomplish the mission or the goals within the mission with competence. I think the leadership piece of that working to prepare our operators in their mind and body is probably two of the biggest goals that I have and the other leadership on our team. With that, we take them from a crawl, walk, run perspective. So, right, just because you can pass the trials and tribulations of SWAT selection, right, doesn't mean you're an operator. We have the longest, what would you call it?
Is it
probationary
longest?
Period. Okay. Sorry.
You're good.
We have one of the longest probationary periods for a unit at our department, right? It's a year long. And wow. Why is that? Because you need to be able to integrate with the team, because with alpha males come a lot of different personalities, right? Typically, we all get along. It's a brotherhood or sisterhood. We've had several females on our team. Hmm. We'll include them too. But preparation of their mind and body. So the both of those come with assistance from us, right?
Yeah.
So we talk about the mind and emotional intelligence, being able to react to a stimulus or to another person, right? Because we don't always have the luxury of acting first.
Right.
But we're always reactive for the most part. It's very important. But emotional intelligence, we do a lot of training on threat identification and de-escalation, right? So one of our scenarios, reality-based training scenarios that we put our recruits through, is a scenario where they have to talk down somebody that's in a domestic disturbance with their partner, and it very well looks like a hostage situation. It's not designed to be that way or in that way, but it provides an opportunity for that recruit to utilize those de-escalation skills. Right, and know where their skill set ends, but also what resources they have.
Yeah.
Right.
Wow. So
de-escalation is always the first thing that we're going to utilize, because we don't want to be forced into having to do something that may hurt somebody.
Yeah. I think that there are a lot of parallels between, I mean, for me, playing at the Division I level in an extremely highly competitive team, when I came in, we were 8 in the country. And, you know, talk about people who are alpha males and people who are driven and really focused on their goals and their mission. And that's something that kind of part of the reason that I'm so motivated to do the podcast is because I want to help other people focus on how can they pursue greatness within a team environment. And I think so often, whether it's within sports or within whatever organizations we are, it's very like centrally driven. How do you, within the SWAT team, make sure that people are on the same page as far as like, hey, you're here for the team. You're not here for yourself or to get a promotion. You know, at the end of the day, it's for those people and for our community.
Great question. So how do we get buy-in?
Yeah.
Like with everything that we do, communication is key. And there's often the breakdown. That's probably the first thing that's going to break down in society. And we've seen it on so many different platforms occur. It's one of the things that we plan to fail on every operation. Communication is what makes units strong, but knowing how to patch that communication when it fails and knowing it's going to fail. For example, we went to a swatting call or a call for an active shooter at a high school here last few weeks, about a month ago. And that was the first thing that failed. It not only failed with the mechanical device, the radio, because we're in a metal building, all right? The signal can't get out, right? So you can't, good?
Yeah.
So that communication, but also in a high stress situation, everybody is sorting in their mind. They're playing a game of chess and or putting a puzzle piece together based off of the facts or actionable intelligence that we have at the time.
Yeah.
And trying to communicate that to your partner or another team element to accomplish the mission is very difficult. So there's numerous different ways that you can do that. But to answer your question,
communication,
we prepare them on how to communicate in several different ways, whether that's verbally or through a mechanical device like a radio or cell phone, or with nonverbal communication with their body actions, right? Their body movements.
How does that translate over into hostage negotiation scenarios? Is it the same thing? Is that the most important factor is communication?
Absolutely. So that's why in the SWAT community, we have lots of toys. That's what makes us special, right? Special weapons and tactics, or special tools and tactics, if you'll look at it that way. So we have numerous different ways, and all of them are to assist or aid us in that communication piece, because what we're trying to do is de-escalate a situation, a volatile one, and save lives, not only the life of the victim, but of the perpetrator, right, and the law enforcement or other first responders that may be on that scene. So communication is huge, and a lot of that can be done this side of the house, looking at how do I resolve a hostage situation, helping that person that makes initial contact, right? And if there has to be a trade-off with a hostage negotiator who's specifically trained in that, then that's going to be to a great advantage to us. And we do that with several different ways. PA system, loud hailing, right? Versus just talking to each other like we are doing now, depending on how close we are in proximity, to very specialized gear and equipment that will allow us to communicate both ways by injection of technology.
Yeah.
I'll leave it that way without giving away
right. a bunch of stuff. That's awesome.
We like to have some tricks up our sleeve, right, to establish that communication. I don't want to divulge them all.
Oh, of course.
There are several different ways, but at the end of the day, the communication piece is an emotional intelligence. It's trying to relate to that person that they're in a high stressful situation. They're at the worst part of their life,
right?
Likely, and getting them to come back from that.
And you're not going to be able to use those tools unless you have the structures in place that, I mean, at the end of the day, it's people.
Right.
You're dealing with people. You're not dealing with machines. You're dealing with people, and the machines are a tool to aid in that communication. And you showed me, kind of sitting in your office, that picture that had a quote on it. Can you, you know,
General Al Gray. Yes. It's one that there's several different quotes that I'll share with you that hit home a lot with me that help express my passion with educational law enforcement from the basic peace officer course through my SWAT operators, right, that I'm trying to bring up. And General Al Gray, the United States Marine Corps, said the most formidable warriors are students of their profession. And when I explain this or share this with our cadets or anybody else, I tell them what that means to me. That means to be the best, right? To be the strongest people we are, we need to be students of our profession, right? We need to be educated in some form or fashion, whether that's a trade or a skill or whatever specific thing it is that you do, right? But that always changes too. Just because you have that knowledge and say this recording device machine now, that technology is going to look completely different in 5 to 10 years.
For sure.
Right? Or just how you and I communicate, right? So it's up to you, right, to maintain that student status within your profession, whatever that is. Right?
Yeah.
You always need to seek out the new education, right? Another quote that leads to that I first heard at basic SWAT school from Master Sergeant Paul Howe is selection is a never-ending process. And that hits home because that'll let you know everything you need to know about yourself, right? Because I can do a certain PT level score yesterday, but can I perform at that today?
Yeah.
Right? Performance on demand. And sometimes even that emotional intelligence comes to play. When you find yourself having toxic thoughts about your situation or where you're at or other people, self-reflection needs to come into play. And are you going to leach out that toxicity to the other people surrounding you, or is it time for you to step
right? Because in a lot of cases, that's life or death. And for me as an athlete, I think I get so wrapped up in like, oh man, I missed a shot. And like, to me, I mean, I'm sure if you looked at it on like a biochemical standpoint or, you know, on a neurological standpoint, the reaction that we have to this situation is probably very similar. You know, everybody has loss aversion, but in the situation that you guys have with SWAT, it really is life or death. And how do you guys look at the, I think that you said like selection is a never ending process. That's extremely powerful. When you guys are looking at that, how do you guys maintain a high level performance, you know, day in, day out, when you have things going on in your family, when you have things going on in your community, when things aren't always, you know, you didn't get, you know, you have a baby, you didn't get sleep the night before. How do you maintain that high performance?
From experience, I can tell you how on my SWAT team we do it. And I know just from talking to numerous others, we all do it in a similar way. So we have to vent, right? Some people call it bitching, but, you know, you have to get those toxins out, right?
Yeah.
Those overwhelming opinions that you may have about a person or a specific situation or a person not performing to your expectation. But for the most part, we hold each other accountable. We maintain that openness because, like I said earlier, is that this is a team sport and a specialized team sport when you're referencing SWAT. And just goes back to communication, right? Communicating that's why after every operation and usually after every training, we have a debrief. After a large situation, we'll have an after action report, right? Where we get to hold each other accountable, right? Although we like to point out all the positives and everything we did well, but it's more important to identify the things that we maybe failed at or were deficient. So that's what we can train on next time. But understanding that you're not perfect and I'm not perfect. And that person's boyfriend or girlfriend could have affected them negatively in their mind space, their headspace during that operation is important for us to understand. So communication and relationship building within your team is extremely important. And that's where that piece of emotional intelligence comes into place.
Does that connection and those relationships that you have within the SWAT team, when you're trying to build that team, how do you guys build such an effective bond? Because I think, especially amongst like a group of alpha males who are very like grown up individualistic for, and I'm thinking for tennis as well, like a lot of tennis players, tennis is a very individual sport. I know a lot of people who listen to this don't play sports or aren't athletes themselves, but when you're dealing with a team of high performance individuals, which applies within business context, which applies within the police force, how do you guys build that team bond where you guys are just like, these are my brothers, these are my guys that I'm like willing to put my life on the line for?
That's a great question. I think through a series of accomplishments together, right? Or failures. So you can learn from both. And I would say that you probably learn more from failures. But so accomplishing those goals together, whether it be as a whole team or subunits. I was explaining to you a little bit different compositions of our team. We have different jobs, everything from breachers, explosive breachers, ballistic breaching with shotguns. We've got sniper teams. We've got robotics and drones, hostage negotiators. We've got rope work with rappelling and fast rope. We've got all these different specialties, right? And sometimes to accomplish that overall objective of, you know, getting that cohesiveness, we have to accomplish little tasks, whether that be a robotics test, right, or a sniper qualification, right, where it requires two shooters or an observer and a marksman. That can be very rewarding, or
right
on the other side, right? So for me, going to advanced sniper school, it was in Waco, a place called Tiger Valley. It's a very difficult course, but it required two people. I had to have the trust of my spotter, who was giving me wind corrections and distance, or confirming distance, right? And then I had to do the whole physiological part of sight alignment, sight control, and then autogenic breathing, the physiological piece, put it all together, right? But if any one of us was off, the shot's off.
Yeah.
Right? So that's a win, right? But if I were to miss that shot, we both failed together.
And I think, right, owning that and recognizing, like, because it's so easy for us to point the blame and be like, oh, and I'm thinking doubles. Yeah. I'm making connections here. But I mean, even, you know, we're like, oh, my partner wasn't doing well today. Oh, they're, you know, whatever was off. That was loud. Sorry, one of these things just went off. But yeah, I mean, oh, like my partner's whatever was off, like he wasn't focused today. And I think that, like you said, having ownership, I love to think about, sorry, give me a second. This thing is like, all right, that's doing its own thing over there. I don't know why. Anyway, all right, I got off track. But yeah, I mean, we're talking about the importance of, you know, team victories, team wins, team losses. And I think that connects a lot to what I do. I've done a lot of research into Navy SEAL training and kind of David Goggins, like who's going to carry the boats. Those sub teams that you were talking about, what do those look like within the different groups that you have? How is that important to like the overall team's success?
So each mission has its own specific requirement for tools or actions, right? So again, what separates us apart from, you know, we have extra training and less lethal. Well, what does less lethal or less than lethal incorporate? We have different munitions from a 40 millimeter projectile, right? So we have launchers that can shoot sponge rounds, right? That hurt.
Yeah. It'd
be like you hitting somebody with a tennis ball.
Or like a paintball.
100 and something miles per hour, right?
Yeah, not comfortable.
Well, no, it's going to grab their attention,
yeah,
right? To chemical munitions that we can inject to make them uncomfortable, right? To get a response, right? Those can be a very integral part, right? So that we don't have to escalate to deadly force, right?
Right.
Tasers are in that mix. But we also have distraction devices, flashbangs, or what we call a SWAT rock. You just create a distraction. You could be just throwing a rock through a window. It makes a loud noise, right?
Yeah.
Improvising. The breachers. If the breachers don't get their job right, it negatively impacts everybody else. We have a contingency for that, right? It's a secondary or a third point of entry. But speed, surprise, and aggressive action are things that we train to, and they all have their specific place.
Yeah.
And we have tools to accomplish that, to overwhelm. But each piece is integral. If the person that's, you know, on the loud hailing device isn't spot on with, you know, communicating our presence and our intent, mm-hmm. it's extremely important every time we operate, right? That's why we, when we service a warrant, we have our lights going on, red and blues. Everybody knows that that's police,
yeah. right?
Or should. And if they don't, this loud voice, right, that's saying police or sheriff's office, we have a search warrant for 123 Smith Street, surrender the residence. That's, we're identifying ourselves, who we are, that we're here, and what our intention is,
yeah.
right? And we do it loud enough so that neighbors can hear. They're great witnesses.
So they know to stay indoors.
Right, but each one of those can have a positive or negative effect if
yeah.
done correctly. And I think it goes back to, you know, everything's pushing towards communication, which is going to fail, but knowing how to patch it is important.
Yeah.
If you don't get it right, right, that's where training and communication comes into place.
So. You've been a part of kind of each one of those teams. You mentioned a lot. I know you've done a lot with the sniper school, a lot with, do you have any input with like kind of bomb disposal type stuff? Or have you kind of been in, which groups have you been a part of?
Fair enough.
And, so. And a deeper question tied to that is which group is communication most important in?
Ooh. That's a good question. So, okay, to identify the groups that I've been your entry operator, right? I've only breached a couple of times, which is a skill set we all need to have, right? But it's not my specialty. Robotics technician, I was ahead of that for quite some time. I still dabble in it, but I like tech toys. So, but I would say the sniper team is most. We do a lot of training working together in a pair or more, depending on the structure of what that specific situation requires.
When you said more, is that like two snipers and two spotters, or is that one sniper and like a couple spotters?
The typical deployment that we like to have when we're granted that is a shooter and a spotter, right? So
yeah.
there's confirmation and there's intel gathering on both sides because we're observers first.
Right.
Like we're trying to obtain intelligence or information that can help safely resolve the situation. How we do it, we put eyes on it, we get confirmation of that, right? And then we can relay that to command, right? Or if a situation presents itself, save a life. But that communication is paramount because you have to be very specific and concise with what you're relaying.
Yeah. Right?
And on time, not only with command and the rest of the team, but also with your partner, right? That's confirming what you're seeing. So I would say the marksman, the sniper team requires probably the highest level of communication because that's what they do first.
Yeah. Oh, and like you said, if one person's off or if there's a little bit that's not communicated properly, the shot's off. And,
right.
you know, it's not like you get a bunch of them.
No, because so. We're responsible for every one of them.
Right.
Whether it doesn't matter that, you know, your finger was sweaty because of this anxiety that you're experiencing
right.
through the shot, you don't get a take back.
Yeah, no, that's so true. And I think it's cool now that you've had that experience within, like, being the guy behind the trigger. And then also now leading and teaching people how to do that. When you're developing leaders and when you're trying to train people, and I'm kind of, I guess, leading a little bit towards what we had mentioned earlier in our conversation, but like what framework do you have for kind of training leaders in an effective way?
I do train leaders. We often refer to not only SWAT team and training our operators, but the basic peace officer schools that it's our basic peace officer course, our cadets that, the basic peace officer course is a leadership school because you're leaders in your community.
Yeah.
Or you should be striving to be. But on the team, preparedness, and with that comes another quote that I like. It's from Benjamin Franklin, and he said, failing to prepare is preparing to fail. And that's something my sons and everybody in my house hears often, as well as the cadets here. I apply it to myself because I'm not perfect, and I can find myself feeling lazy sometimes and not wanting to put in the work that the job requires,
yeah. right?
Whether it be PT or eating right.
I'm the same way.
Yeah. So, but it's huge. Failing to prepare is preparing to fail. Most of us know what needs to be done is the execution part that some of us can fail at.
Yeah.
So preparing them, and you can look at that several different ways, but preparing leadership, what I've done in the past is that usually comes with a mentorship, and each individual is different. And that's going to look different. That program is going to look different based off of the individual, their attitudes, their life experience, their work experience, right? And what they've shown thus far. So it's kind of each one is individually developed and it's fluid. But a mentorship is huge. And that's what we employ on our SWAT team. So these new guys that are coming up that we're looking at that display the characteristics of leadership that's going to replace me.
Yeah.
Right. You put them under your wing, you give them a mentorship, and who knows how long that takes. I had a great mentor. He's now retired, and he helped me navigate through a lot of law enforcement, just day-to-day job stuff, because he was my patrol sergeant at the time too, as well as he was a commander of the SWAT team before he retired.
Wow.
It's huge to identify those people that are doing or possess or display the characteristics that you want to attain and go after them.
Yeah, and ask for help, because I think a lot of people are willing to, you know, doing what I'm doing, you know, just asking people. Like, I'm trying to find people who are great. I always say, like, I'm an aspiring great. You know, it's somebody, I don't think that's attainable yet where I am at, but we're always striving towards that. And I think that's the exact same thing that you're kind of describing here.
Right. So So what are you doing? Have you identified people that can benefit from your skills and knowledge now that you've attained through life?
Yeah. Well, I mean, for me personally, I think that it's funny because I look at myself a lot of, I'd say my freshman, sophomore year, I've looked at myself a lot as just like strictly an athlete. I'm like, oh, okay, I could help other tennis players. But what I've learned along the way and doing this and talking to other people is like, there are so many parallels. I mean, we're talking about, you know, SWAT, life or death type things. And yet I'm still drawing connections to tennis. And I think that there are a lot of applications to performing within athletics at a high level of competency and how that translates over into other spaces, whether that is, you know, whether that's into business or whether that's into leadership or that's into, you know, personal development. And so part of what I'm doing now as a senior, and I guess this is a long way of saying it's a process, you know, finding people that I can pour into, finding people that I can lean into, not just through sitting behind a microphone and talking to people. I think that's one way to do it, but even more so being more intentional about finding Aggies, finding other people in my community who need that help. And so I think definitely that's a daily challenge for me, is finding how can I pour into other people? How can I be a mentor for other people? And I always use the analogy, you got to put on your oxygen mask before you can help other people. And so the way I visualize it is, it's really hard to pour into other people unless you're being poured into yourself. And that ties back into exactly what you were talking about, where you want people on your SWAT teams to be learners, to be people who are constantly coming in, day out, and teaching themselves, and students of the game, students of their profession. And that's exactly what I've been trying to do up to this point as well.
You're doing a great job. One of the things I can tell, characteristic that you've developed that's going to help you succeed, is that you're a great listener. You're not taking any notes on paper, but you're taking them mentally. You're keying in on specific words that I'm using, right? And traits, and you're filing those away in your mind. And that's a great thing, because too often it ties into emotional intelligence, right? You have a lot to gain by just listening.
Yeah.
Active listening. And with our job, that's huge. Like I said, it all goes back to communication. But you're right. Put on the oxygen mask first before you can help somebody else. You have to be right. You're never going to be perfect, right? I like the book I shared with you. Master Sergeant Paul Howe said in that book, Leadership and Training for the Fight, the team leader should live the example, right? So although we're not perfect either, we need to understand that people are looking at us and hopefully aspiring to have that responsibility or those characteristics that they see us display, but constantly reminding ourselves to live the example of what it is, what defines you. Because SWAT doesn't define me. Being a police officer doesn't define me, right?
Right.
They're little pieces.
Well, and I think also a big piece of that, and it's funny, it seems like the underlying current is communication, but like when people understand it, and there's been a lot of challenges in the media with law enforcement, and a lot of that just comes down to, like you said, communication. People don't understand the full picture. But like you said, I mean, when you show up to, you know, to a disturbance or to whatever scenario you're in, your number one goal is to communicate why you're there, what you're doing, and how. I mean, you're there to help. This is your community. If you're overseas, if you're a Navy SEAL fighting in a foreign country, like you said, the rules of engagement are completely different. But at the end of the day, you know, when they're here on our soil, they're Americans, they're family members, they're friends. And I think a lot of times we forget that. And a lot of times people forget that the goal is to help each other, and it's not to, you know, it's one to maintain you're holding people to a standard that is set not just by the government, but by people and by the way that you know, if we're going to operate our community in an effective way, there have to be rules and there are consequences to breaking those rules.
Absolutely. You said that very
well. I appreciate it. Yeah. We're getting close to time. Did you hit the main points that you wanted to on the triangle?
No, I haven't. That's what I wanted to leave
okay.
with.
Yeah, let's go, I guess, to run that up, because I'll probably just cut out this section. Okay. But, yeah, how should I tie into that triangle? Is it more of...
So this is how I explain. So often, and I found myself looking at this. So I've been successful up until this point with my career. And to say that is, I started in our corrections department, right, as a correctional officer. Did that for just under a year before I went to patrol. And once I got a couple of years under my belt, I was asking myself, what's the next step? How do I progress?
Right.
So I look around, you look at your partner, your beat partner that, you know, that you're working at a specific area with. You look at your supervisors, you look at things, and you look at what is the natural progression. And then does that align with what you want? Right.
Yeah.
So for me, it was field training. Right. So the first leg on the side of the triangle is yourself. So, right. When I looked at, am I ready to become a field training officer? Because in my mind, that's what I identified as the next step for me. And I looked at, am I confident and competent in the duties and tasks that are currently assigned to me, right? As a police officer, do I understand the law, right? Do I understand the policies and procedures of my department? Do I understand and am I competent in all those areas? And if that's yes, that's one side of the leg checked off, right?
And most people just stop there.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's where you often see rocket effect. Rocket's only going to go up so high before it does what? It
starts to come back down.
That's right. And I've seen it often. So the next is your peers. Now, this can be tricky. There's only, you and I probably only have a handful or less of people in our life, our friends that are truly friends. Others put on a facade, right?
Right.
And in the back of their minds, you know, they may want to see you fail, right? Because they're of jealousy or whatever. We know society, right? You've been around for 22 years. So you've seen it through middle school, high school, college, right? Is that you have some people that are fake and that they put on the same.
Right.
So, but your peers will let you know.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's worth asking them, hey, do you think I'm ready to take on this responsibility? Or just talking to them about that responsibility and getting what they feel. Mm-hmm. Most of the time, they will probably come to you first, but not as often as the last triangle, and that's your supervisors. So to look at the triangle, it's self, peers, and supervisors that make up that triangle, right? And when you have all three together like a pyramid, it is extremely strong and can withstand time. So when you have those, I think you're on a path to success with what your goals are. But if your peers don't accept it, or the people that you're going to then lead, right? Because most of the time, we'll put it into a transition. I utilize this same thing for when I promoted to a sergeant, right? Am I confident with the roles and responsibilities that I have now? How are my peers going to perceive this? Because once I take that step, who are now my subordinates?
Your peers.
My peers, but they have to understand too, and you have to have that relationship that I'm not going to change who Jake is, but my responsibilities are going to change.
Right.
Right, and they need to understand that. But if they look up to you as somebody that leads, they're pretty much going to, they would probably tell you, or at least in my experience, right, you can tell when they're ready.
Yeah, and I think two things on that. One, you know, I think that this is so important for leadership, especially when you're leading amongst peers. One, you're setting the bar high for yourself and for the people that you're leading. And so I think that it's so important to, you know, one, recognize, hey, I'm not going to be perfect. And I think communicating, like, if you, there are people who come across as like, I don't make mistakes, I've got everything figured out. You know, I think being at the same level as your peers and recognize to the extent of, hey, I'm not perfect, I'm not messing up, or I'm going to make mistakes. But then secondly, and more importantly, making sure that you have this mindset of, I'm going to, and I just lost what I was about to say. Well, yeah, it's more about living above reproach. And so when you're holding yourself to a standard, you hold yourself to a certain standard. And if you want to hold the people that you're leading to a standard as well, that's something that you have to hold yourself to as well. And there, you can't ask people to do something. And that's something that I've learned in my classes this year, especially as a leader, don't ask people to do things that you aren't willing to do yourself.
Right. Which is why it's so great. I'm glad you came to do this so I could that you use that book.
I'm so excited.
Live the example.
Yeah, and for those of you guys, I'll put this in the show notes, but it's called Leadership and Training for the Fight, Using Special Operations Principles to Succeed in Law Enforcement, Business, and War. And for those who haven't read this, what's the importance of this book to you?
Oh, man, there's a lot of good. The importance of that book is I was given that by Paul Howe personally at a, we'll just call it Advanced Hostage Rescue School that we took. He's one of those mentors, right? He comes from now, you would call it the old school, right? But his thought processes and tactics can still be applied today, right? He cuts a lot of fat out of stuff and just tells you like it is. He's willing to look at new things. If something works, it works. If it doesn't, right? He's willing to spend the time to try it, right?
Yeah.
So he's very open with his students. But it's a very unique insight into leadership because it is all about accountability and living the example. And when you find yourself unable to live the example, like we discussed earlier, it's time for you to step away.
Yeah.
Right? Selection is a never-ending process. There's going to come a time where I need to step away for whatever reason. Does my mind fail me? Does my body fail me? Right? Or does my emotional intelligence fail me? Am I no longer able to bottle up that toxicity, those thoughts, those negative thoughts, or get them away, you know, and I just need to step by so that doesn't, or step away so that doesn't leech out to the
rest. And at the end of the day, that comes back to, well, and I think that one, when you do hit that process where you're like, oh, like this is an area that I'm not competent in, that goes back to that first leg of the triangle of self. But then also more importantly is recognizing the situations where you're not competent, recognizing where, hey, this is something that I need to work on, and being comfortable for the team's sake of letting somebody else step into that while you're working on that, or letting people come alongside you. And we were talking about mentors saying, just asking for help, because alpha males don't want to ask for help. We want to act like we have it all together. People are looking to us. We're making life or death decisions. And I think that's where a lot of people stray away. And that's where we start to see problems, when you're not communicating your challenges internally that you're struggling with and not asking other people like, hey, this is, because we're all strong in different areas. We all have our own strengths. We all have our own weaknesses. But if we can't effectively communicate those to our team members, then that's where people get hurt. That's where we don't operate effectively as a team. And that's where you just see people having burnout and challenges and all these challenges that at the level that you and I are operating at, you're operating at a significantly higher level. But these are decisions that impact, you know, lives in your case. But and then for me, like, you know, there's a lot on the line as far as like what happens with our team and what happens with the A&M community, which feels really big for me right now because, you know, that's what you put all your training into. I've been training for 12 years now to hit a tennis ball over a net really well. And like you said, all those things have to be operating in sync if that's going to operate effectively.
Sports teach you a lot, teamwork.
It sure does.
And life is teamwork. That's
what, yeah.
You know, some of the strongest individuals behind us are significant others or our family members.
Right. Yeah.
It takes a team.
You're not doing it on your own. Yeah, that's so true. Well, as we wrap up kind of the episode, I wanted to give you the opportunity. This is what I love doing with what I'm doing with the podcast, is kind of talking to my freshman year self, or myself kind of 5 or 6 years ago. If you had to kind of go back and share something that you learned, that you know now, that you wish you knew 5 years ago, what would that be?
Is the how important emotional intelligence and communication is in several different aspects, not only professional but personal life as well. And it's still a constant struggle. I never really get it 100% right, because God gave us emotions, right?
Right.
But understanding them and being able to quell some of the negative emotions that may come out, I wish I would have read that book sooner. I wish I would have looked into emotional intelligence and stuff like that a lot sooner, the communication. Yeah. I think that helps you navigate life in general a lot easier.
Yeah. And I think, and I guess in closing, for people who, because I have a very elementary understanding of emotional intelligence, and I know we've talked about it a lot, how would you like define that in terms of like, what is emotional intelligence?
So knowing that we all have biases and prejudices of anything, whether it be culture, food, some people have racial biases and prejudices, whether it be clothing brands or foods we eat, whatever it is, we identifying that you have those, right? So self-reflection is huge.
Yeah.
In emotional intelligence. and also understanding situations where you're going to have a good set of brake pads on, right?
Right.
So stopping those thoughts from passing all the filters through your lips, right? But like we discussed earlier too, is that, you know, communication and displaying that emotions are not always verbal. They can be physical responses too, whether your facial expressions or hand gestures, or just merely turning around and walking away from a situation or a person.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining us. This was kind of one of the coolest conversations that I've had. I've always had a high respect for you and for what you do. And I know that there's so many people who are listening to this who are probably blown away. Probably their note sheets are more full than yours are. And so just thank you so much for coming on and for talking with us and for sharing that. And we look forward to kind of seeing what you guys are doing. Obviously, extremely grateful for your service and look forward to, you know, staying in touch. So anyway, thank you so much.
You're welcome. My pleasure.